Okay, we're going to have a mini Groves tonight as a preamble to studying the plagues. A situation occurred last night in which I complimented, you know, I was going to talk about it.
No, I didn't.
Remember, start to squirm.
Yeah. Well, don't squirm. Yeah, don't get nervous.
Yeah. Also, now I've seen icicles growing down.
I like the way you don't tell us we're going to have a
media response. It's getting colder in here.
When you said that, my media response was, so it's that seat. No boy, the rocking chair, you know. I was like, so it's that one, you know.
Can you have another caller?
Yeah.
Now, quit doing that. Do you want to be free, or do you want to be in prison the rest of your life?
I think it's better the way you felt in the car last night.
Amen.
Freedom is the... Yeah. And all we're doing is breaking through illusions. Okay, long story short. One of the reasons that they've figured out about bulimia, some 93% of all bulimics or anorexics are females. And the reason that they, one of the most interesting reasons is that the propensity towards anorexia or bulimia begins at the young girl's awareness that she's a woman, or at puberty. And at that point, there's a psychological change, a mechanism that takes place within the child that requires a father's affirmation of her worth, and it requires a father who's able to show emotion and show that he cares and appreciates her. And in many instances, since we didn't have perfect fathers, we had fathers that were incapable of showing that. And because of that, God uses those tendencies to teach the body things so that we can see, so we can be free, so all of us can be free. And that need for worth or approval is gut. It comes from the gut. It has nothing to do with what you spiritually know, or it has nothing to do with what you intellectually understand. It has to do with somehow, through time, God has got to be able to show you that there is another instrument of establishing your worth, other than appearance, or fat, or lack of fat, or dressing up, or on and on and on. And so what God does is He puts us in a body. And slowly but surely, over time, we find out that our worth isn't dependent on any of the things that we thought it was dependent. But we, as a hunk of protoplasm, have to continue to test it. And we do it automatically. Now, the worst thing I could do would be to compliment her all the time. You know, what she needs to know is it doesn't, you know, I don't give a flip. She's loved and appreciated and everything else without the need for any other externalization, without the need for any... And it's interesting, Harry's in another case. Harry constantly needs affirmation of his worth with regard to activities that he does, things he does.
I don't know how you can say that.
You know, the latest one is Harry's latest travels have been down the road of giving people advice. So he's constantly, several times, he's told me about the quote-unquote good advice that he's given somebody, and he's waiting for me. I can tell he's waiting for me to say, yeah, that's right.
No, I figure if you don't yell at me, it's right.
or like I go over to the office and he takes me by the hand and he shows me every light switch.
At least you're not special.
Yeah, don't feel special.
We've all had the light switch tour.
Well, you know, what's important to Harry is that this is also gut. It's not intellect. What he has to become to know and realize is that, you know, his worth and his, it has nothing to do with any of that stuff. I mean, the worst thing I could do to Harry would be to compliment him all the time. So I'm stuck with these two idiots, neither one of whom I can ever compliment because I'd feed their high place identity.
But it's great because we both end up working for the perfect guy.
Well.
How come I missed out on this advice giveaway? Oh, I'm available.
But you understand now. So all I want you to understand is that, and I ignore him. I mean, the worst thing, I want you all to understand that the worst thing I could do is to run around and feed that false identity. Mm-hmm. Now, in some of you, there's another mechanism that's going on. You know, like, there are other things happening. So like if I tell Daryl that I love his poetry, which I really do, and I liked his writing, you know, and then if somebody else, and you know, some people may resent that, just like, you know, but it's a different, there's a different thing going on. You don't treat everybody the same, and I don't sit around and think about it. It happens automatically.
I'm surprised you can say anything around us that somebody's going to do something with it.
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah. But anyway, give ear and hear my voice. Hearken and hear my speech. Doth the plowman plow all day to sow? Doth he open and break the clods of his ground? When he hath made plain the face thereof, doth he not cast abroad the fitches and scatter the cumin, and cast in the principal wheat and the appointed barley and the rye in their place? For this his God doth instruct him to discretion. Now discretion is in the New Testament called discernment, or in our parlance it's called BS detector. A BS detector, it has to work two ways. It has to, it's how you respond to people in addition to, you know, I mean, it's seeing. Okay, now God has promised that he'll give you all this discretion. Other places it's called wisdom. Wisdom is the proper use of knowledge. Now I'm not telling you this not to prophesy. I want you to prophesy. But prophesying is the rough corners of prophesying are rounded by wisdom. Especially if it's concerning someone else. You understand that? Okay, so, for his God doth instruct him to discretion, and doth teach him. For the fitches are not threshed with a threshing instrument, neither is a cartwheel turned about the cumin. Now, here what he's saying is, each of us are a different type, for this example, of seed. And in the harvesting of it, in order to get rid of the chaff, cumin is a very sensitive little dealie, and you'd ruin it if you rolled a cartwheel. Or anyway, for the fitches are not threshed with a threshing instrument, neither is a cartwheel turned about the cumin, but the fitches are beaten out with a staff, and the cumin with a rod. Bread corn is bruised, because he will not ever be threshing. Because he will not ever be threshing it, nor break it with the wheel of his cart, nor bruise it with his horsemen. This also cometh forth from the Lord of hosts, which is wonderful in counsel and excellent in working.
Where is that?
Isaiah 28. But I want you to understand that when, you know, almost all the time let's pick on Gary, for instance, since he's not here. Almost all the time since I've been gentle with Gary until Thursday. I haven't been very gentle with Harry. I mean, the point is, and you'll know, you're doing the same thing. I mean, you're doing it. You're all doing it the same. You don't treat everybody in the body the same. That'd be stupid. But all I'm trying to get to you is to trust your instincts and don't think that you have to respond in the same way or, you know. And I don't want to put you all on a trip now about being afraid to compliment people or something because you're afraid to feed their high place. Don't worry about it. You don't have to give it any breath. It'll happen automatically.
It's like the world has taught us, our parents have taught us, we should all get exactly the same piece of pie for dessert.
Right.
And it's stupid.
Okay, does everybody understand that little pre-Groves thingy?
Except when Barbara gets a bigger piece of cheesecake.
Okay. Anybody have anything? Any response?
What is bread corn?
That's like this corn. I mean, wheat.
Okay, but I mean, why is it only bruised? I mean, what is it?
Because it's hard.
Because it's hard. It's bruised. It's hard inside. So all you have to do is get the chaff off the outside of it.
So we're bread corn. Or
well, you're different things.
Harry's bread corn.
Oh, okay.
That's what the meaning of this was. It was just used as an example to say, don't now take this and say, I'm a bread corn and go over here and say what.
No, I wasn't. I was just trying to understand what you were saying.
You and Butch are fishes.
What's a fish?
Son of a fish.
I
want to
be barley.
We're fishes, but we
want to
be coming.
We want to be coming,
so
too.
Bad. Oh, God. That's so bad.
He didn't even recognize what he said until after he said it.
That's a first.
That's a first. No, that was planned.
Okay, Exodus 7. No, Exodus 8, excuse me. Continuing, but what?
We're trying to find out what Moses was really like.
I asked you this before. It may not be important, but I'm still wondering about Moses and Aaron. If the lice got on them and if the frogs jumped on them.
I'm sure it did.
Well, I guess the last ones didn't.
The blood, the frogs, and the lice got on them.
Yeah, it seems like it took a lot of guts to hit the staff on them.
Okay. We're on the flies, and the flies are all over the place. And in verse 22, I will sever in that day the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there. To the end thou mayest know that I am the Lord in the midst of the earth. And I will put a division between my people and thy people. Tomorrow this shall be this. I can read. Tomorrow shall this sign be. And the Lord did so, and there came a grievous swarm of flies into the houses of Pharaoh and into his servants' houses and into all the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted by reason of the swarm of flies. Now, there's two things that you have to know about here, both internally and externally. Obviously, internally, there is a severance between that which is of the soul and that which is of the spirit, between that which originates from God and that which originates from your own mind. The scriptures are full of prophets who say they have seen a dream and they've lied. Of who generate by the soul all kinds of excitement to tell you something. That God's going to do this or God's going to do that or, you know, this and this is going to take place. So the point of in you is this. Remember, all our goal is, as we go along, our goal is to be able to confess with God or be able to speak the same thing as God or to be able to see the same way that God sees. That's why we meet so often. That's the only reason we get together. That's the only reason I teach. And in doing so, you'll find out that the thing that is most obvious to you in the course of time is the fact that you begin to think differently about things. And it happens automatically. And that thinking differently about things and no longer trusting in these schemes and ideas and ambitions and all of that, that difference is a part of this process. God is putting is severing, I will sever in that day the land of Goshen. Even if there's a division, there's a distinct horizon that's inexorable. That's why you can never leave here and ever be the same. Because that distinction has made a very real impression at some place in your mind or brain. And you can't think about things the same way any longer. Now, the second part of this, and it's in verse 23, I will put a division between my people and thy people. Tomorrow, this sign be. The division is the external. The severance is the internal, and the division is the external. The external is that it's what, remember, if people call you holy or there's a saint, I mean, nobody's going to, you don't have to worry about it. Forget that one. Nobody's going to call you holy, but except me. But the word holy, the word saint, the word sanctified, all have to do with this idea of a division between you and everything else. It includes such things as being able to totally and completely follow your impressions, being able to totally and completely trust whatsoever happens. If you're on the highway and you have a flat tire, well, you don't let it upset you because you know that what that flat tire did is to protect you from being killed or maimed in an accident a block away. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So that if there's a division by which you are dealt with and your inner relationships among external stimuli in the world are now totally and completely different. Now the promise is, none of the plagues from now on are going to happen to you, to the real you. God's not going to let the flies defile your prayers. You understand? The reason is because you have been redeemed. You are now no longer your own. Even the things about you that you still think of as negative, they're not your business any longer. And if you can ever get that through your head, then you can begin to understand the completeness of when God put a division. Once you've said, Father, I'm yours, then there's no part of you that's your business. No matter how much other people try to get you to tell you it's your business. Because there is a division between you and the world. I mean, we're no longer, since the warfare is not flesh and blood, we're not at a place, we're not going to all go to some external place and there put up walls and gun turrets and stuff. But the division is the way in which stimulus can affect you.
And the causes attributed to the stimulus.
Right. Now you only have, there's no second source in your life. This will make you different than everybody in the world. There's no such thing as a second or third or fourth cause. There's only a first cause. Now that'll take some time to penetrate your being. Because once you see there's only a first cause, you can never, ever, ever again get excited or pissed off or, I mean, over something that happens to you. Do you understand what first cause means?
Mm-hmm. It's like the source. You think there's another source from which all this stuff is, because I still go through that every day. The first impulse is, this is just happening because things like this happen. But then there's another part of you that's saying, ha ha.
Are you trying to get mad?
Yeah.
Well, you don't mean excited or pissed off, do you? That sounds like you would be a robot if you'd never get excited or pissed off.
Well,
I mean,
whether or not it sounds that way or not, you will learn through the stimulus that takes place that you will never be excited about the things that excite Egypt. You will never be mad at the things that make Egypt mad. You'll never fear the things that Egypt fears.
Okay, yeah, it would be different than Egypt, but...
Well, will you still experience the emotion or feeling of anger and the emotion or feeling of excitement?
No. Not for any external cause. You rejoice because your name is written in the Book of Life. That's the only one. Am I communicating to you?
Yeah. As opposed to being excited because you can drive a demon out of something.
Yeah. Or because you can, because something, you know, you get money or you get mad because somebody looks at you cross-eyed or something. Those things go away.
But that's something that will automatically take place. It's not something to try and become or do.
That's right. And they automatically take place because of this division that we've talked about. Okay, so now what happens again? The thing is repeated. Okay, so you got the flies and your prayer, everything's getting screwed up. So Pharaoh calls for Moses and says, go sacrifice to your God in the land. Okay, I'll make a deal with you, God, again.
It's Egypt making deals with God.
Right. And Moses said, it is not meet to do, for we shall sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God. Lo, shall we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes? Will they not stone us? We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God, as he shall command us. Now,
in verse 22 it says, they may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the earth.
In the midst, in you.
But I mean,
in the earth.
Still sacrificing the land.
Well, yeah, they want to, that's what we're going to talk about right now. Okay.
Well, you're going to ruin it for everybody.
The word abomination is a word that means something so disgusting, something so abhorrent, that it's an impossibility. It's like this stupid infection I have in my nose.
Abomination.
I mean, we're talking abomination. I cannot stand that. I mean, if you can imagine having an infection in your nose, so the smell of that infection is always there.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I've had one that spread to my jaw, made my teeth hurt. Yeah. That's not going to happen to you.
No, but mine started in the jaw.
Oh, yeah.
It spread to his nose.
Poor Al.
Now, in Egypt, the sacrifice of any animal was an abomination in Egypt. They held every animal to be sacred. They worshipped almost every form of nature, the sun, the moon, the stars, the planets, rivers, animals, even the onions and leeks that grew on their ground. Their belief was that when the giants made war on the gods, they were obliged to flee to Egypt and take refuge there in various creatures in order to escape. Such were therefore sacred, protected, and worshipped. And they believed strongly in the doctrine of reincarnation. They thought that departed loved ones were born in the world again in the shape of the animals, or these vegetables even. And if any were killed, some relative would be killed.
What
did
they eat?
Come
on,
share
it with us, Aaron.
I want to come back as an onion.
Or a leek.
No, puffy.
So,
what did cucumber, Aaron?
Yeah. That was next. Well, so what did they eat in the midst of all of this idolatry?
The only way that they could, that's why they had to pray over the food so often, which is a whole other story which I won't go into.
Is that why people do it so much now?
Huh?
The Hare Krishnas don't eat.
Yeah, it's the same kind of deal.
Their relatives are.
You have to sneak up on the cucumber to kill it.
Forgive me.
Let me give you some of the gods of Egypt. and what they represented. Now, some of these gods they've adopted, you know, and got adopted later in other cultures, and so. But anyway, Jupiter was the ram, Apollo was the crow, Bacchus was the goat, Juno was the heifer, Diana the cat, Venus the fish, Mercury was an ibis, Memphis or Apis was the bull, Ammon was the cow, Mut or Mut, the wife of Ammon, was the vulture, Horus, the sky god, was the falcon, Ra, the sun god, was the hawk, Set, or Satan, which was also the god of the east, was the crocodile. Osiris, the god of the dead, was the goat. Isis, his wife, was the cow. Thoth, the god of intelligence, T-H-O-T, was the ape. Heka was the god of abundance, or goddess of abundance, the frog. Beelzebub was the lord of the flies. On and on and on. And then the pharaohs were also thought to be gods.
The goat is the god of the dead.
Well, he's also the god of the live goat, is the god Bacchus. If you notice, there were at least four of those gods that I read off that were either a bull or a cow or a heifer. Mm-hmm. And they were the chief gods of Egypt. And it was in the astrological period in which Taurus was the chief god on astrology's tables. You understand that? And so, in all cultures that had any basis of this crescent, even anywhere in the world, the chief god was represented by the first sign of the zodiac that was seen in the morning of the spring equinox. Okay, so, as we'll see tomorrow when we study, we're going to study more about the offerings tomorrow night, that the main offering for the sin offering was a bullock. It was a bull. Because it represented the chief god of the age, spiritually, and also it was the, in Egypt, if they would have physically been killed, if they would have killed a bullock, they would have legally been stoned under the Egyptian law. Now, that's why you cannot serve God in Egypt. Because the real chief God always and ever has been the individual, the self. Now, that's why in Egyptian hieroglyphics, there's a great many of the hieroglyphics that are represented with a bull, the head of a bull in the body of a man. And that's why the false god Molech in the Canaanite and Assyrian cultures and had the head of a bull in the body of a man. But you can't possibly celebrate the Passover or serve Jehovah God while your heart and mind are tied to Egypt. It's impossible. While your heart and mind are tied to the things of the world, you can't be a Christian businessman. You can't be a Christian attorney.
At this point, they haven't come out, much less got to Sinai yet. What would they have been sacrificing at this point? The law was not yet given.
No. You remember, the Passover has been hinted at throughout Genesis. They would have celebrated. They would have had Passover instructions. Moses had the Passover instructions,
which would be a lamb.
But the right, and the lamb was still.
It was an annual.
The lamb was still, though. A biggie in terms of
being illegal to kill.
Illegal to kill.
Well, they would have had in some form. They would have had the burnt offering, right? But not the sin offering,
right? Now, but I want you to visualize this, though. What modern religion has done is they've set up a system of belief that didn't require. They've paid attention to Pharaoh. They've set up a system of belief that did not require the sacrifice. Now, I say all the time that all it religion does is put a cultural, put the label of Christian as a cultural, I mean, as an overlay on their own culture. Well, I want you to see how intrinsically evil it is to do that from a spiritual standpoint. I mean, it's like, it's literally creating a Pharaoh church. Do you understand that? That's why you cannot serve God while you're in the world. That's why the plagues have to come on you first, so that you see the vanity of it. And they can, by the way, again, plagues, they're a response. They don't have to, you've been given imagination, so you can empathize, you can see it happening to you. You know, we don't need the 97-pound hailstones falling on us to see that most of us have a refuge of lies. Well, not most of us, all of us do. And that's what the hailstones destroyed, is the refuge of lies. But this is enough for tonight. But I want you to see how you, that in this process, this is not optional. This is inexorable. You cannot worship God in Egypt, in the world. And Egypt in the scriptures is always a type of the world. But, and the reason you can is because you will have to kill, you'll have to sacrifice the chief god of the age, and that you can't do that in the land.
Is that the reason that they won't? Did they know that that was what they were doing, sacrificing the chief god?
Yeah, well, I don't know if they did or not. Moses knew, I'm sure. I don't know if the people knew.
And so, if we're in the world, obviously, that sacrifice can't be made.
Right. That's why in the way Paul talked about this in the New Testament, he says, use the world, but don't abuse it. And the word abuse means to give it breath or give it sacrifice, give it importance. You use the world, but don't abuse it. Use it like a hammer. This sounds very cold, but it is. You use it, but you don't abuse it. You don't give it importance. It's just an instrument. It's just a tool, like a hammer, to accomplish the one end that we're all on.
When you mentioned the inexorability of this process, we were joking on the way over here about, you know, us, Moses, choosing to leave Egypt. Ha ha. Getting thrown out of Egypt on your ass. And how similar it is to the birth process. I mean, you're just forced down that birth canal, and there's just no turning around and going back, and you end up on the floor.
But faith sees it as a different. You know, we've talked about this before. As you remember, Moses was kicked out because he killed an Egyptian, and he was under death penalty. Right?
Ran for his life.
Now here's what it says in Hebrews. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. The act of him seeing Christ caused the Spirit to look at all of this as a positive act. Mm-hmm. In the same way in you, the act of you seeing Jesus, no matter what the circumstance, causes God to see you in the same way. Amen? And that's all we're about. Nothing else. All this, you know, all the little world stuff is absolutely meaningless. It's why, be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, and be not conformed to this world. Now, the world, you all heard me talk about it, but it's good to remind you here. The word world there is the Greek word aeon. Be not conformed to this world. Now, it's a word that isn't translatable in English. The closest that we come to it is German, Zeitgeist. And the Zeitgeist means the spirit of the age. It means all value systems, all good or bad, all moral systems, whether they're evil or good, all anything. It's all systems within that age. We are not to be conformed to the spirit of the age. That's why the test of true preaching is if they speak of the world will follow them. And that's the false preaching. We speak of God, and he that knoweth God heareth us. By this you know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. But the reason for that is, as long as they're in Egypt, all they can do is speak of the world. They can have little campaigns, and let's get everybody to accept Jesus as their personal Savior, which is the dumbest, I mean, that's not even that. That acts like they have a they can make a decision. Come down and make a decision for Christ, or you know, let's go out and save this group or that group. Or it's just ludicrous from the spiritual standpoint. Or if you follow these little rules, then you'll be good. If you follow these little rules, then you'll be bad and you'll go to hell.
I worked at Campus Crusade convention at the Anatole, and it was a dinner, and they were asking, like they asked the richest people in Dallas to show up, and they were asking each one of these businessmen to donate $1 million apiece. It was running a spotlight, and they were down there asking these guys to donate $1 million apiece so that they could go ahead and translate the story of Christ, which they had done in a good movie. They were going to translate it to an additional 135 languages. You know, and they're talking about people carrying, a movie projector through swamps and stuff to these, these little towns. I mean, they were doing it. And they were asking all these people to donate millions of dollars. And I was just, man, slide 1,000 my way. I'll make a movie. Yeah, baby.
Speak of tongues.
Well, I don't want you to, I want you to understand that, within the group of people that call themselves Christians, many of you were there yesterday. And I'm not mad at the people. I'm mad at the false prophets.
Amen.
And so even the people, the dumbest Christians I ever met were the rich Christians. I mean, they had no idea. They just get tooled around and go to conferences and they go to stuff because they feel an obligation to. But there's something inside that's gnawing at them that they know this is BS. And what we have, not just for them, but for anyone, is freedom. And you remember the stories I've told you. If you all of Ezekiel is about this, but if you see the storm coming, and you're on the wall, and you're the watchman, and you don't tell the people, then their blood is on you. Now that's the mystery. It's not that you're going to go up, okay, now let's define how we're going to do it. It's just that's the inexorable process of belief. If you believe, you will speak.
That takes the heat off.
It's kind of like, I remember, it was an analogy they were using. It was us to, speak to people. And I was like, in fellowship and stuff, but it kind of stuck with me that, like, there's a terrible storm and the bridge is out. You see people coming along in their cars and you just let them go off into the.
It's the same. It's the same principle. That process. Anyway, that's enough. I don't want to talk anymore. Okay. Take it, big guy.
Snow, a CD jukebox player,
and a rich wife. He always sinuses.
Amen.